We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
With the third pick in the 2020 NBA Draft, the Charlotte Hornets select LaMelo Ball from Chino Hills, California.
TJ. Oh, my goodness! Stunning with the left hand! Devontae deep! Oh, my goodness! I don't believe it! A 30-footer to Devontae Graham!
Just stop it already!
All right, everyone. Welcome into another Buzz Beat, a Charlotte Hornets podcast. I am Richie. And be sure to give us a rating and review. Make sure you guys are subscribed so you guys get the episodes the minute they come out. We always appreciate those subscriptions and those ratings and those reviews. Also, our Buy Me a Coffee site is linked in the episode notes. That's our website where you can make a donation and get access to exclusive content. We also have free content as well. Right now, our supporters have access to a 5-minute read on Nerlens Noel and his potential fit as a free agent signing. Also, I do need to give a shout out to our latest BMC supporters on the pod. We've got Ian, Cam, Owen Watterson, and Darren Vaught. Thanks for listening, guys, and thanks for donating as well. BG, you do some broadcasting with Darren. Do you have any stories that you can share about him?
Nothing too, he's too polished, to have like a great embarrassing story. No, Darren is a really good guy. One of the top, you know, play by play broadcasters, I would say in the, you know, in the state or the Southeast, but, I'm fortunate enough to get to call High Point men's basketball games with him the last couple of years and do some, radio calls from the ACC tournament as well. Great guy, great broadcaster. And I wish I had come prepared with a better Darren's. I'm sure I've got something, but just nothing coming to the top of my head. But thanks to DV and everyone else that supported the site. We really appreciate it.
We've got Spencer with us as well. Hope you're doing well. I know you're excited to talk about Şengün today, Spencer, because I get the vibe out of the three of us, you may be the highest on him.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I like Şengün a lot. Man, I just love watching him play offensively. He's a pretty polished youngster. So looking forward to it, doing well. What the draft's like, what is it, 15 days away? It's on the 28th, is that right?
Or yeah, it's on the 29th.
Oh, sorry, 29th. Yeah, okay, so it's
still 2 weeks away. Same thing.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. We're so close. I mean, it just feels like we just had a draft.
Here we are again. The draft cycles are just crazy because you had how many months? You know, you had 16, 17 months leading into the 2020 draft, all the pandemic dragging out. And there was really nothing else going on but just to like watch tape and talk about the draft. But then because of that, you only had, you know, then 8 months or 7 months before this draft comes along. And it'll be, I guess, 11 months before we get the next one. So the stuff moves. Yeah. I've already started 2022 draft prep. So I'll be ready to turn the page, but yeah, it's crazy that 2021 is getting here so quickly.
Another real good one, I know for sure. But it's fun. I've been thinking a lot recently just about all the things that could happen here in the next 3 weeks for the Charlotte Hornets. I mean, I think there's a lot of trades on the table. Obviously, free agency is going to be quite a bit of fun and a little nerve wracking, if you ask me. And then the draft, which we're going to discuss today. So we're closing in on some busy Hornets news. A few weeks, I think.
Yeah. Did you guys by any chance see that, Richie? You just wrote a profile about Rashawn Holmes at the site. Did you guys by any chance see any of the photos of it's like a lot of the Sacramento Kings working out together in the offseason, but no Rashad Holmes.
I saw that
in the building.
I do wonder, were there any other free agents? Like I obviously didn't look up and down the list, so it might make sense because he is a free agent, doesn't want to get injured or something like that.
Totally. Yeah. I do think it's a little, it does seem like Devontae is still around the Charlotte facility a little bit, but even that is like a little peculiar just because he is, set to be a free agent too.
Right.
I saw an Instagram pic from Monk the other day that was, it was not pictures of the workout. It was only two pair of basketball shoes. Now, who knows what gym he was in, or who he was with, but one of the pairs of shoes was teal and purple. So
all right.
I don't know if he's trying to be cryptic or what, but that's all.
Yeah.
All right. So we will get to Sengun later in the podcast. I want to actually start with Jalen Johnson. I think Brian and Spencer both wanted to talk about him. And actually, this is good because I've not really looked into him and they forced me to kind of look into this guy. Freshman out of Duke, 6'9", 220 pounds, got a good NBA frame when you just kind of look at his build. I think he's got like a +2 wingspan at 6'11", so it's not bad, but nothing really to write home about. In terms of his athletic profile, he's a pretty quick guy. He can get vertical off the ground fairly quick. He's got good speed, and that kind of leads me into one of his biggest assets, and I think that's his open floor offense. I think that's where you're going to see probably an immediate impact is that transition offense. He really excels there. I think that's predicated a lot on his handle, his vision, and even his willingness to pass the ball. I mean, he's not a guy that is so locked in on himself that he wants to get all the buckets. He has a willingness to pass, especially in transition offense, can drive and kick to three-point shooters or drive and kick to guys that are cutting towards the basket. And he just really wants to attack anytime there's space for him to do so. He feels like a guy that has this athleticism and frame, and he's able to draw the attention with his drives and force opponents to collapse. So I do think that's one of his biggest assets right away on the NBA level. Now, when we're talking about offense, and again, we can obviously branch off to defense as well. Where I saw the most concerning parts was when the offense slowed down in the half court, because of his shot, because he can't, get much wiggle and create space for himself. And his form doesn't seem that great either. And his free throw shooting is not really a good indicator. That's where I worry about this guy. So transition offense, great. Half court offense, I think it's going to be a project for him. And that's just kind of how I view him on the offensive side of the court. So, Brian, I'll pass it to you because I know that you follow ACC sports and Duke specifically. So, Jalen Johnson, I know he's only played, 13 games at Duke. So, thoughts on Jalen?
Yeah, let's start off with the athleticism stuff. Measurements at the combine, just a little under 6'8", 8'10", standing reach, and a wingspan that was like a notch above 7 feet. So he's plus a couple inches in terms of the wingspan via the combine. You talked about the speed. I think he's not the quickest guy going like 0 to 60, but because in the open floor, which you mentioned, he gets to ramp up a little bit. And I think once he gets going in a straight line, he can be pretty fast and sort of just like can eat up space because of his frame. That's one of the times where I do think his length and his size is like pretty functional. Vertical leap, like obviously he can really do some explosive stuff on the break in transition, but doesn't get off the floor very quickly, slow load time, lateral quickness, not great, struggles to change directions. But some of the other stuff that is good, coordination, body control, some of the body control moments and flashes that come with him, finishing around the rim, especially in transition, those are on the roll. Those are pretty good. And Richie, you sort of like touched on, and before we move to defense, we should really focus in and zero in on Jalen Johnson's offense and sort of like the role that we think of him fitting into. You mentioned the transition game. I mean, he can be a dangerous sort of like open floor playmaker. I think that's the spot where his playmaking and passing skills are on full display. And like I said, that's where you get sort of like the best bits of his athleticism too. And it's where he can really ramp up, get to full speed and get to the top, it's sort of like the apex vertical leap that he has to offer as well. But for the most part, you're looking at like a point forward, a guy that can give you some playmaking and both the half court in ways that are maybe going to be a little less conventional in the open court. He's a very good passer and he's got good size. I mean, he's not, you know, we've talked about Scotty Barnes and Cade Cunningham on here. Like, he's not those guys, but he can be a very good passer and do it in a bunch of different ways. And then his short roll, his rolling to the rim, his pick and pop into space, and then attacking closeouts. So basically, like, his usage as a screener in the half court is sort of like where you get the best bit of that. I do think some of that comes with the right matchup. Like, some of his better attacking possessions at Duke came when he was defended by a five. You know, Duke would run pick and pop. He'd slip into space and then attack the closeout from the recovering big man. Again, nice body control, assuming there's no resistance at the rim, does not handle contact all that well. And to be clear, like, he's like not really like a great screener either. Although I think some of that is like Duke and system dependent. We've talked about this in relation to Vernon Carey Jr. Guys not like really holding their screen before trying to roll and get downhill. So, you know, can he be a perimeter creator? There are lots of tools: the height, the passing, coordinated athlete, the handle, little subpar. So I don't know. It's tough to think of like the best spot to fit him in terms of the half court, but he's raw. There's a lot of upside given some of his athletic traits in the passing, but the shot is bad. There's very little reason to buy the shot, the jump shot at the moment, especially like shooting off the dribble. And the touch itself is not all too good either in terms of like, you know, trying to finish from the, you know, the floater zone in that 6 to 7, 8 to 10 feet range. Not really great in there either, but the passing's great. The vision is good, makes pretty good reads, sees different sides of the courts, sees cutters, sees shooters, good kick out passer. So there's some real stuff to like here with Jalen Johnson, but there are some very real concerns in terms of his half court offense too.
I think that Johnson is a worthy prospect, you know, in the lottery. Obviously a very incomplete season and resume, you know, at Duke only playing 13 games. And in those 13 games, you know, just playing about a little over 20 minutes a game. So there's not a lot to go off of here. You know, for me, it starts with his passing. I mean, I think that's really his greatest asset as a player right now. I do like when Duke posted him up, you know, put him in that short corner area, elbow area. You know, as Brian touched on, he's really good at seeing the floor. He can get it to the opposite corner. He can find cutters. He's got a good feel for the game in terms of being able to break it down and read it when he's got the ball able to face up and make a play with it. I think he's a good straight line athlete. I mean, we learned that in transition. Those were probably his greatest highlights, right? The most eye-popping highlights that he has on film from his little time at Duke. But the lateral movement on both sides, you know, obviously specifically defensively is where it really shows up. That's a concern. I don't know if that's tied to him still learning, you know, that aspect of the game, needing more polished footwork, if it's truly just an athleticism deficiency for him, or it is tied to his past injuries. So that is a little bit of a concern. I think that his medical and what teams are able to see in that, since BG, I know he had a foot injury last year at Duke, and the details on that, at least as far as I know, were never really revealed. So, you know, I think his medicals are going to be very important for teams. And obviously there's some character questions about him, which there's not much information out there about that either. But the whole situation about him leaving Duke early, BG, I think he remind me about his high school career. I think he left a high school or two.
So
there's some things that followed him into that part of his past.
He never played for IMG. He never played for IMG.
Yeah, he left. He's from Wisconsin. He left to go to IMG, ended up not playing there. But he also even had some health concerns in high school as well. So like he's bounced around, you know, a fair amount. And it was about mid-February this year is when he declared for the draft. Yeah, you know, a little over halfway through the season.
So, you know, I don't think you could ask anybody in their right mind that any of that is a positive, right? So there's a lot of homework to do with this prospect. But I think you look at him 6'9", 220. There's versatility on offenses, I think, has already been well covered. And then defensively, more to tap into. you know, not the best lateral athlete, good vertical athlete, but he's long, as you guys discussed, and you can place him in a lot of different situations, matchups on the floor. He's one of these guys where I'm starting to warm up to the idea of him if he's there at 11 for Charlotte, which he does feel like he's going to be at this point, just because, and BG and I were texting about this on Sunday, I think it's, you just can't have enough of these guys on your roster, right? These versatile wings, especially young ones like Johnson, where there's development to be done here. That's very obvious, but it's very unclear of exactly how much more development there. Like, what else is there to tap into? Can he be a secondary ball handler that can initiate some offense out of a pick and roll at some point in his career? Can he be an above average, if not, you know, an elite defensive wing? I mean, I wouldn't bet on any of those things, but I also wouldn't tell you that they're impossible. It's not an impossible outcome with Jalen Johnson. You know, BG talked about the shot. It looks bad right now. It is looks like a robot shooting the basketball a little bit. He shoots it on the way down. Mm-hmm. There's no fluidity to it. So he's got a long way to go on that end. But, you know, if you're talking about a high upside pick at 11 at a position that is the most valuable position in the NBA, I think it's hard to look at Johnson and say that it would not be worth the flyer for Charlotte. Let's say if their top two options there were gone. So it's a high risk, high variance pick, but yeah. But I think there's a lot of upside here.
Yeah, both of you guys mentioned the side to side mobility, and I want to stick with that on the defensive side real quick, because I think we've hit enough on the offense. I think his side-to-side mobility is not great just by watching him play in these short sample 13 games here. But he looks like a guy that's athletic. You would think that he would have this side-to-side mobility. But I will say this, after kind of watching him, that type of stuff, like on-ball defense, one-on-one defender, it's not quite there yet. But he does have some instincts. And correct me if I'm wrong, if you're seeing something different. Like, I feel like he has some weak side block potential. He averaged 1.2 blocks per game. I know that's only a limited sample size there. He's not a rim protector in the you know, traditional sense, where he is just basically bodying up a guy on a straight line drive. I think there's a difference between that type of person versus maybe someone that can, you know, instinctually help off a guy on the weak side block and come over and help out his teammate and block a guy at the rim. I feel like he's more of a team defender than he is a one-on-one defender.
Yeah, I mean, he had good flashes of weak side rim protection this year, and emphasis on flashes. Like, it's not like he can anchor a defense in the back line, but it is another area where you do see him apply his length. And a lot of that also depends on his motor, which tends to run hot and cold too. He's got some mobility, but a lack of flexibility hurts him in these situations. As a one-on-one defender, just like kind of like beaten repeatedly by both big guys in the post or wings on drives, given his strength and athletic traits compared to college players, guys in the ACC, pretty disappointing, honestly. Had some nice moments as like a pick and roll switch defender, blocked Jose Alvarado one time during one of the Georgia Tech games on a, you know, one-on-one situation after a switch, but just plenty of moments when even a perimeter shooter type, not even like a driver, would just go right by him and go to the rim. Like, I remember Cormac Ryan from Notre Dame, who's like a pure movement shooter, just smoked him. And just a lack of flexibility could really cost him there. You know, if his length just sort of like wouldn't allow him to make up the difference. Duke switched a lot 1 through 5, which was part of the game plan to play Jalen Johnson and Matthew Hurt together. And I want to touch on that more, on Hurt and Johnson on the offensive end before we close out on him. But they wanted to switch with those two guys. And so they even had Matthew Hurt switching 1 through 5, Jalen Johnson switching 1 through 4, 1 through 5. And when that didn't work, Duke played a lot of zone this season, 3-2 or a 1-2-2, like however you want to slice it up. So that limits some of, you know, his man-to-man assignments and opportunities. And I think this is less important because in the NBA, he'll switch a lot or whatever, but he was awful as a pick and roll drop defender at Duke. Bad initial position, not an athletic stance.
Stuck in mud.
When the downhill driver would get to his level, you mean, even if Jalen Johnson was in position to meet the guard at the point of attack, he was just getting blown right by. But in the NBA, I mean, I don't you're not going to really ever play drop with Jalen Johnson in the NBA. So that's not like a huge thing, but maybe it speaks to some of his other sort of like defensive one-on-one concerns and sort of trying to corral or stay in front of guys that have a little more zip with the basketball. Like that is a bit of an issue with Jalen Johnson.
Yeah. I mean, I think to what Brian was adding, I mean, he's one of these guys, again, you can see mostly because of his physical profile where there's some real upside, him in transition, good straight line athlete, but he just does nothing. You can't point to anything that's above average, right, that he does. And he doesn't have an elite skill yet. And, you know, defensively, you know, Brian was touching all the things that he really struggles with, and it's obvious on film. And my question with these kind of guys is always, is it because Miles Bridges looked like this on film out of Michigan State, and he looked like this his rookie year too, and some of his sophomore year, right? So it took a while to come online. Now he doesn't look like this guy, but is it that they're stiff, that it's injury tied to injuries, that they're physically not capable of doing it, or is it that this kid has not been coached because he's been moving around his whole life, right? And I would add this to finish on this, and maybe Brian has some thoughts, but Duke is not it's as far away from a elite defensive breeding ground as it probably gets in college basketball. And there's some reasoning behind that, but you know, you would imagine that for Johnson being in the ACC at Duke would have been his first opportunity to really be coached on that end. I don't think many guys are, you know, like Brian said, they either play zone or they switch everything to cover up a lot of deficiencies. And so I don't really think Johnson had an opportunity to sharpen the axe on that end. So I'm not completely writing it off defensively with him.
Yeah. Duke, I think, you know, the program was built on this sort of like aggressive man-to-man gap defense, deny, attack, you know, really extend the pressure point, the point of attack. You know, if they have the personnel for that now, like if they have a Trey Jones, they'll do that. Maybe they'll do it some with Jeremy Roach this year. But for the most part, you know, they want to just switch everything, keep everything in front of them. And if they have the special athletes, then let those guys, you know, go out and be great. If you have Zion or Cam Reddish, let those guys turn up in the passing lane. It's less good if it's someone like Cassius Stanley, who was a nice prospect out of Duke a year ago, but is sort of clueless away from the basketball. One thing I do want to bring up on Johnson, though, since we're talking about Duke, I want to bring this up before we get out of here. Moving back to offense, like context is important. Duke's roster makeup this season wasn't great. We've talked about this, I feel like, a lot last year when we were talking about Cole Anthony with regards to UNC's personnel around him. And it's not the same thing. But with Duke, you didn't have much wing shooting, especially early in the season when Wendell Moore Jr. was struggling. You know, it was really just DJ Stewart. And he was inconsistent. Duke sort of did a nice job, I think, early on pairing Jalen Johnson with Matthew Hurt. And so, you know, playing him with another big guy, Hurt at the five, that could really shoot. And so you could see what they were trying to go for, right? Which was, all right, we don't have a point guard. Trey Jones is gone. You know, Jeremy Roach, Jordan Goldwire, DJ Stewart, all these guards are fine, but they can't really be a primary guy. You know, Wendell Moore Jr. can give us some playmaking. I think Duke was really banking on Jalen Johnson being like, you know, maybe not a primary for them, but the guy that created the most half court offense for them. And unfortunately, that was a bet that was bad for a variety of reasons. But they even tried running some 4-5 pick and roll out of Horns, or a little chin pick and roll that turned into 4-5 pick and roll with Johnson and Matthew Hurt or Jeremy Brakefield. But it was really simple for teams to switch on those actions and just stay in front of Johnson. And he just routinely could not beat college centers, in the half court with his dribble. And that ultimately is why that Duke offense really didn't hum all that much, because they bet on Jalen Johnson being a guy that could bend defenses and pressure the rim with his dribble. And he was far better getting to the rim either in transition or on the roll, like as the screener and rolling to the hoop or getting to downhill on the short roll. And they did some of that with Vernon Carey Jr. and Matthew Hurt two seasons ago too. So it's not like they drew that stuff up just for JJ and Hurt, but they even would run like straight spread floor ISO with Jalen Johnson, do like an early like handoff pitch action, like kind of between half court and the 3-point line, almost like how, you know, Nick Nurse and the Raptors will do for Siakam. But like those plays would just go nowhere, you know? And even in Jalen Johnson's, like, the best game he had at Duke, which was the game up at Pitt, he still struggled getting by Justin Champagne, who's a, you know, another hybrid forward, all ACC type player that, like, Jalen just couldn't get by. It's like the best moments he had in that Pitt game were against Koulibaly. They were against Terrell Brown. These are like college centers. And I do think because of this role they were asking him, Johnson, to play, it put a fair amount of strain on him. And it's just, yeah, some of the matchups were less favorable, and his lateral quickness was getting matched up against a lot of like wingy college fours. So Jordan Usher at Georgia Tech, Jalen Withers at Louisville, Justin Champagne, who I just mentioned, even a mobile five like Juwan Durham at Notre Dame. And he just could not, he couldn't beat those guys. Same thing happened when they played Michigan State. Like in the half court, he laterally could not turn the corner with the basketball around those guys. This season at Duke, he played only 278 minutes. 189 of those were with hurt. Duke was only plus 14 in those minutes. Some of those minutes did come with JJ at the four, Matthew Hurt at the four, and Mark Williams at the five, which is was a disaster lineup that they occasionally tried that I actually wrote about a couple times during the season, because it was just a really bad thought process to try to work with that lineup. And look, Duke really found it's the best gear they had all season, really, after Jalen left. And I don't think it's because, oh, it was, you know, the Ewing theory, or they just needed his personality in the locker room. I don't think it was anything like that. It was, they allowed them to put Mark Williams at the five. They moved Matthew Hurt to the four, and all of a sudden the half court matchups got a lot better for them. And Mark Williams could be a pressure point for them at the five in the pick and roll game, which is what they needed. And Hurt could post up more on fours, and it just, everything clicked into place for them late in the season because of that stuff. And Wendell Moore Jr. started to play better too, which was helpful, but just like, context isn't everything, but it is definitely important with Jalen Johnson. And those moments, like his inabilities in the half court at Duke to beat guys laterally, because he's a little stiff, he's a little rigid with the basketball, plays a little upright. You know, he can get stonewalled by some guys, and when he can't get around them, that's also when he has a tendency to make some really bad decisions, try to like throw passes into windows that aren't there. And some of those passes, it was like, oh no, he's, you know, that he has good vision. He's seeing something ahead of time. A lot of times those passes also felt like an eject button on just a dead possession. Right. And just like, I can't get by this guy. All right, you do it. And he would just throw the ball into a crowd, or throw it to a player that he thought was going to cut that wasn't going to cut. So yeah, like Jalen has big time potential. But I do think at least in the immediate future, it's going to be context dependent as to how much he can actually help your half court offense.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, I want to do this thought exercise. I know this was not on the script. I was just thinking about this as we were talking about Jalen Johnson, another Johnson, Keon Johnson. I feel like these players have some similarities in the sense that they're both raw. They have some upside to them and they have some limitations as well, especially shooting the ball. I have eight categories. Just give me a one word answer, Jalen or Keon. You tell me which guy fits the bill better for this category. And we're just going to go down the list here. So in terms of Keon versus Jalen Johnson, who is the better playmaker, Spencer?
Keon, barely. And neither of them are good.
Yeah, they both have flashes. I'll say Jalen, but it's close.
I'll say Jalen as well. All right, shooting. this is a tough one. We'll go to BG first. Shooting.
God, they're both horrendous shooters. I will say Keon, but man, it's tough to say. They're like he was a really bad shooter this year at Tennessee.
I agree with you on that one.
Keon. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I think Keon has a lot more potential moving forward.
He at least can shoot a pull-up jumper. Yeah. Like Jalen can't really do that right now.
All right. Handles. I'm going to go with Jalen on this one.
This one's tough, too. I actually think Keon here. Yeah. He's only got two or three dribbles in the bag right now. But as BG was just touching on, he can get to that pull-up. I think he's got a much better chance of being a half-court initiator.
Yeah. I would go Keon with as far as just pure handles. Yeah.
Okay, this one is probably going to be an obvious one. On ball defense.
Yeah, that's Keon easily.
Okay.
Yes. And I even like Keon's on ball defense more than probably the consensus. I think he's a lot of potential there.
He's a good on ball defender.
What about
very good on ball defender?
Off ball defense.
I like Jalen here. I was going to say when we were talking about him a little bit ago, it's not always good risk taking, but he is willing to be a defensive playmaker. You guys touched on the weak side block potential. He also averaged over a steal a game. The indicators are not terrible there. So I actually like Jalen for this.
Yeah. I'll say Jalen because of the length and yeah, like the flashes of team defense that he had at Duke this year was some of the best stuff he did. Like during 300 minutes he played in Durham.
I would agree there. Active team defender. All right, three more. Rebounding. I'm going to go Jalen here for this rebounding. I mean, I know it's tough.
Jalen. Yeah, Jalen, but I will say I touched on his issues with contact. Like, he has good defensive rebounding numbers.
Right.
But rebounding situations, it's another one of those areas where he gets pushed around a little bit. But I'll say Jalen Johnson.
It's funny you mentioned the avoiding contact. Like, he did that at the rim, but he still finished with a good number at the rim. So it's just interesting to see that. All right, two more. Upside.
This one's difficult as well.
Yeah.
I'm going to lean Keon here, though. I think his athletic, how he has popped athletically since the end of the season. I mean, people already knew he was a great athlete, right? But what we've learned since then, and I think the offensive skill set that there's to tap into specifically in the half court with the ball in his hands, I think it's Keon here.
Oh, it's tough to say, man. Both these guys could be there's some realities. There's some development arcs they tap into where either of these guys could be the fifth or sixth best prospect in this draft. I will say, boy,
I'm going to say Jalen. I'm going to say Jalen. Brian, you break the tie.
You'll say Jalen. Oh God. I'd rather just keep it as a tie almost. No, I'll go Keon because I'm tapping into the shot. Keon may never develop the shot. And if he does, it's still going to take time, but it's easier for me to see him having a more reliable jumper at this stage. If I'm thinking about who's more likely to stay on the court, like in a playoff game or whatever, I'm sort of thinking about who gets the jump shot first and how versatile can that shooting be? Mm-hmm. So because of that, I'll go Keon, but that's tough because of Johnson's sort of big wing potential.
And one quick thought on this specific question, Richie. I just think Keon does have one thing he does in the elite level right now, and that is defend the basketball. Yeah. Like, heat the ball up at the point of attack. I think he's the best in this class at that.
Yeah, I guess when I consider about what he has right now, I guess I consider that more of the floor than the upside. But I get your point. The variance with Jalen here is just so large. All right, so if both are available, this is the last category. If both are available at 11, who would you rather draft for the Hornets? I'm going to, even though I feel like I answered Jalen with most of these, I'm actually going to stick with Keon here just because of the floor aspect. I trust him more.
Yeah, I think if Keon is there, I really don't expect Keon to be there at 11. But if he is, I think I am. I got to think about it. I got to hear other opinions in the room. But I think I am drafting him over Jalen Johnson. I just feel more confident. You put his outcome in an algorithm 100 times. I just feel better of what it's going to spit out more than I do Jalen Johnson's.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because like 11 is really like right at the start of the range where I would like entertain drafting these guys. I still like, I mean, if you want to go for Keon at 8 or whatever, that's fine too. I think sometimes when you see him mocked at like 6 or whatever, it's just like, there's no way in my opinion. But yeah, like once you get like to 10, 11, I think that's when you get into his range. I will go Keon, but I'm not like in love with either of those picks necessarily.
Right. It was an either or, but yes. Yeah. All right, let's transition to the Turkish 18-year-old Alperen Şengün. Athletic profile build here, 6'10", 240. I mean, you guys can push back on this, but I would say he's a below average athletic player. He doesn't really jump off the screen to me. When I watch this guy, it feels like when you're talking about his strengths versus his weaknesses, most of his strengths fall on the offensive side of the court and most of his weaknesses fall on the defensive side of the court. And I think, you know, Spencer, you talked about this in the video that you did on Twitter about a week ago and talking about how you're pushing back on the idea that this guy is just a back to the basket guy, which I 100% agree with that statement. He's not. He's a guy that you can run offense through at various places on the court. He can be a facilitator, you know, at the high post. He can be a facilitator low post, basically top of the key. If you want him to be stationary or on the move, he can do a lot of things all over the court. I do think obviously in the post, his footwork is great. It's awesome. I think he's a good back to the basket guy with a nice, you know, set of moves down low. He likes the up and unders. He likes the spin move, but I don't think to Spencer's point on his video that that's what you're going to be pigeonholed, you know, as this guy is on the offensive side of the court. And he can be used as a pick and roll guy too. So, I mean, he's going to get downhill, make plays on the move. He's got vertical spacing too, even though he doesn't necessarily have the largest wingspan. But Spencer, because it feels like you are the highest on this guy, I will throw it to you first in just terms of like, what do you love about this guy?
I mean, I love his feel for the game. It pops immediately. You don't have to watch him very long. Offensively, he's very, very, very polished at his age. And he's still not 19 years old. You know, what he did in the Turkish Super League last year, winning MVP, the numbers he put up, you know, above 63% effective field goal percentage, above 69% total shooting. He shoots it well from the line. Richie, you touched on how he can be a playmaker from the top of the arc. He can be a pick and pop guy that can't necessarily threaten you with the shot yet. I do think that's coming online at some point. Feel pretty confident about that. But he can threaten you with the put it on the deck, overpower you, another aspect of his game that's underrated. And we know what he can do as a passer. You know, I think he looked off some opportunities last year to be even a better passer than he was. But I think that the evidence is on film, which is all that's really important to me. I'm just like a little confused as to why there's not more of a consensus on, man, this is a skilled 6'10 prospect who's not going to get bullied, you know, in the NBA. He's not. I think his power is super underrated. So the defensive concerns are obvious. He's got zero clue right now. He's a bad drop defender. He can't get out and corral ball screens. You know, I wouldn't say he's not, I wouldn't consider him a rim protector. You know, I think that, you know, we've seen this with plenty of centers of his ilk in the NBA. You can survive with him because of how good he's going to be offensively. We can talk about the fits with him and LaMelo Ball. You know, I think there's conflicting opinions on that as well. I feel good about it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just don't really get it. Like, I don't understand why we're making this so complicated. These kind of prospects that do this in a professional league that's one of the top three professional leagues in the world as a teenager, those are fail safes. So I don't really understand why he's considered a mid first round guy.
I mean, you glossed over the defense, but it's because of the defense. That's why. Like that,
right. But I mean, when you have this high of an offensive ceiling, I mean, we're not arguing he's going to be the first pick. So it's like late lottery and there's still this pushback. He just won MVP at the Turkish Super League. At some point we got to what are we doing here?
It might be a stigma against international leagues. That could very well be it.
I mean, I do think it comes down to it's the defense, and it's if he can't actually stay on the floor, if he's going to be a negative for you defensively, he has to bring so much surplus value offensively to offset that. And it's also going to impact your team building as well. Look, I like Şengün, to be clear. I'm just pointing out these are some of the reasons why he's not a lock for a top 10 pick or whatever, but he's still a great prospect and he has a great offensive game.
Yeah. And one more thought, about the defense, I don't see a guy that's incapable of getting to a place where he's passable, if not even a little bit above average. I mean, he's got good feet. He's not incapable as a shot blocker. He actually flashed quite a bit of that, I think, last season. I mean, and I don't really like doing this stuff, but I think it's worthy of bringing up in this case. Like, DeAndre Ayton's rookie season had the league basically saying, this guy's hopeless in pick and roll defense. Okay. And he's playing in the finals right now, and he's probably the most important player for Phoenix. So they're not the same player, but Şengün is not this stuck in sand, non-athletic center with really, really slow feet that just is hopeless on that end, is never going to be able to get there. I don't see that at all. I do see a kid that doesn't know how to do it yet, needs a little mechanical tuning up and fundamental training on that. But that's not an impossible outcome. He's not 19 years old yet. So that part of it is not a perfect fit on the Charlotte roster, right? Like, we know we don't need another subpar defender on this roster. Everybody's well aware of that. But he is without question the highest upside, to me, pick that the Hornets even have a possibility of drafting at 11. Is he the safest? No, he's not the safest. But he's got a higher ceiling than anybody else that's going to be available there.
I think it depends on who falls to 11. But I still think even then, I mean, even someone I don't know. I think there are a Jaden Springer type that could be there at 11 that has a pretty high ceiling too. I think with Şengün, it really comes down to the quickness and the physicality that he has now, he lacks. Can those improve? Is he his max quickness that he is now? And I assume he'll get stronger because Spencer said, he's 18 years old. He'll get in an NBA, weight program and get stronger, but that's something that's going to have to happen. He's not very bursty. There's not a ton of vertical pop. I think his activity and hands defensively are pretty good. Perhaps that's a good indicator that if this guy's a guy that you can improve with your development staff from a physical standpoint, and coach him up a little bit in terms of pick and roll defense, because he's sort of a mess playing the middle ground right now, that you could tap into something. And again, the offense could be really, really good. I buy his jump shot. I'm not sure at what level I buy the jump shot, but I definitely buy it. I think no matter what you think about, where he can get to defensively, we all know that he's, like I said a minute ago, he's just going to have to hold surplus value offensively. And if he's going to do that, then he's got to be able to threaten from every level of the court. And that includes the 3-point shot. Now, I'm Spencer brought up the free throw percentage. He shot a good number at the line this year, has a pretty good looking stroke, was just maybe a little hesitant this year. But if he can streamline and speed up that release, the mechanics look good. I think he's going to get open 3-point looks, pick and pop threes, spot up 3-pointers in the corner. and given his passing and his work as a ball mover, like he could be really useful in those situations too. Like if he forces a closeout, you know, he can either shoot over the top of it or move it to the next guy. If it's, you know, if it's a weak side stunt or whatever, but also if he can shoot it, then that opens up different positions that he can guard, right? Because if he can't shoot, then he exclusively has to guard centers. And it's just, it could be tough. I'm not saying it's that he's not going to get better or that it's not a possibility. It exists for sure as one of his, as one of his pathways to success. But just like if he's exclusively a five, it can, it could be hard building a winning defense around him. And then that will have an impact on your team and roster construction. But like the offense is awesome, man. Yeah. Footwork really good. His chest work really good. His touch good. His post counter moves good. Good hands. Love that little quick spin he has in the post. Super fluid. And that's a nice way for him to create separation in the paint. Processes the game super well, maybe at like a special level in terms of how he processes the game, like really might be like a transcendent aspect of his game. And I really think that trait specifically is how he found so much success playing, dominating the Turkish league as a teenager. So I have some more thoughts on his offense, but I've been yammering on for a while now here. So I'll let one of you guys jump in. If you have any more thoughts on Şengün.
I mean, you guys touched a lot on the defense. I think that clearly is the biggest concerning part of his game. And there's a part of me that doesn't really know if it's defending out in space or defending down low. Which one is worse for him? I mean, because it's funny on offense, I feel like he displays some type of strength when he has that back to the basket and he's bodying up people down there with his up and unders and spins. And it feels like he's not, it feels like he can't withstand the contact on defense as much as he can on offense, but also out in space with his below average athleticism, you know, that's where he can get into some trouble. He has this weird thing where he just kind of like lunges and tries to take some chances at stealing the ball sometimes. And it just puts himself and his defense, you know, at a pretty bad spot. So I go back and forth whether or not I like him out in space more or down low, but you know, clearly issues concerning on both of those types of areas of the court. And to your point, Brian, about, you know, whether this guy has the biggest upside or not at 11, there's a part of me that just doesn't want to draft him, not because, you know, I don't buy what he can bring to the NBA level, but the free agency, I feel like Hornets can get a center in free agency. I know that's not the right way to think about it because it can be unpredictable, but I think that should cross their mind. Like, hey, if there's a wing here at 11, let's draft a wing at 11 over Şengün and then try our luck in free agency with the center.
Yeah, and that's usually the mindset I would have too, Richie. I mean, it's why I like PJ Washington where they got him. It's like, oh, it's why I like Miles Bridges. Take the guy you know you can plug into a role. You know, with Şengün, like, he's going to be cheaper than any center. Well, maybe not any center, but most centers that you're going to go after on the free agency market. You get him into your development pipeline. He's going to be so young that he's going to have trade value throughout his rookie contract. I mean, I would say that's pretty high probability. So from that team building perspective, I still think it makes some sense for Charlotte. You know, you brought up, is he better as opposed, or where is he worse as opposed to Fender or in pick and roll defense? You know, I think it's and in both right now. I worry probably less about him as opposed to Fender because he's young. Like Brian was saying earlier, I think his body improves. I think his power is underrated. He flashes that power in the post offensively, not as much because of his pure power, but more because when you combine his footwork with his power, it really comes across on the screen. It's like, whoa, this guy, he just moved this dude and put him in the basket. I think defensively, it's going to be harder for him to get to, but he has a really high motor too. Nobody's mentioned that yet. And that's another thing that I'm banking on both ends. Dude plays with a ton of passion, a lot of want to, and, you know, just call me crazy, but I'm betting on those kind of guys too, to get it.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because as we're sort of contextualizing this with Charlotte and the obvious need for a center, we've talked a lot about, you know, in Richie, when you've written about Nerlens Noel or Rashawn Holmes, who we've talked about plenty on this pod. We've talked about Nerlens Noel too. We've talked about guys like Isaiah Jackson as a possibility, or why Evan Mobley would have been like a dream pick for Charlotte if they could have gotten into the top two or three or whatever. But all of those guys give you like the ability to finish above the rim. And right now, I don't think like Şengün is like a bad athlete necessarily. In fact, he has some like pretty nice like open floor finishes where he'll surprise you with his ability to really punch it on the rim. But as like a lob threat, like it just sort of depends, I think, on what you're going to be looking for out of like the center position next to LaMelo. Like, is it a pick and pop, dribble handoff tower type, or do you want a guy that can, you know, really give you that pressure point going to the rim? And some guys can do both. And like the idealized version of Şengün on offense does both, with maybe not so much like the vertical lob component necessarily. But let's just say you do get to, a point with Şengün where the defense becomes passable. Either he's like a, he taps into a part of one of his outcomes where he's like, he can kind of anchor a defense, and you've got at least the right guys on the perimeter around him, or maybe the four on the roster can give you some rim protection too. And it just works out that way. But his offense could be pretty cool. I like his on and off ball activity when he's working in the high post or screening above the break. Good two-man activity with the ball handler, like knows when to flip the screen, when to roll, when to pop. With the ball, you can see him catch, scan the floor, look for cutters. If nothing's there, he can just go. I like his vision. And you can apply that with his back to the basket passing too. Like, he can see the double coming. He can, pass the open guy, even sees the second side of the court, sees passing windows. And so I think if you get that version of him, then he becomes this sort of like awesome middle guy in five out looks, delay looks. And that's where you can use his plus feel to make reads and make plays with savvy guards and shooters and cutters. And, he could be a dribble handoff tower and playmaker. And that's when you get to see even more of his sort of like intuitive flip screen, rescreen, pop a roll, slip to the hoop. Has a little bit of handle, but it's pretty limited too. So, And he's got great touch, on cuts, putbacks. Like, he just, Spencer's point about his motor, like he just finds like cheap points, and I mean that like in a good way. Like, he's just like around the ball. And he's got good touch to finish once he has it. For me with Şengün, it's going to come down to how good of a 3-point shooter can he be athletically? How does he develop? Like, I have no doubt that Shingun's going to be a guy that like can get to like be a mid-30s 3-point shooter, but on what kind of volume, what kind of shots, right? That's sort of what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
And then defensively, how much can he prove in terms of that drop pick and roll defense? Because he's got nowhere to go but up, really. And then how athletically, how much more can you get out of him? And I think the other thing too, like, he's just 18. I think maybe the hope is that he's still growing, getting stronger, whatever. Cause like, I think you'd like to maybe even see a little more size and length at the center position too. I'd like some official measurements, but what I'm saying is like, I don't think he's like a really like big center, even if we say in there are certain contexts where you can see a strength on display. Very intriguing player, very good offensive player. Like, I get it. And I'm, to be clear, like, I'm not out on Charlotte drafting him at 11. He would not be my first pick, but If they go that direction, like there are some things that I like with Şengün that are pretty exciting, specific to his offense that I do like.
Quick thought, because you were discussing kind of the roster construction piece of this. It doesn't have to be with the center position, which we know Charlotte, they better fill this offseason one way or another. It doesn't have to be draft or free agency. They can draft Şengün and sign, for instance, Nerlens Noel,
yeah.
Start Nerlens Noel and bring Şengün off the bench as this offensive savant that might give you some instant offense in your rookie season. We'll see. But now the only thing that means is that you're washing your hands with Carey or Richards, but whatever. Like, those were second round picks. We knew at the time they were dumb, but those were second round picks. So I just as we think about, well, how are they going to do it? Are they going to do it through the draft? Are they going to do it? It can be both.
Yeah. I mean, this is like the benefit of them post Kemba, keeping all their draft picks. Now they burnt one so they could get back into the draft and draft Nick Richards last year, which was perplexing and looks like more bizarre by the day. I'm still kind of like on Vernon Carey Jr. as like a development piece, almost in a role that could be like similar to Sengun, honestly.
Yeah, I'm with you.
But we'll see. We may have a ways to go before we get there. I would have liked to have seen him play more down the stretch, instead of just lighting minutes on fire with Bismack. But I get it. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe there's another gear with Richards, but like, I just didn't see it with him coming out of Kentucky. But to Spencer's point, yes, Charlotte nuked some of the cap space with the Hayward deal and stretching Batum, but you know, this is the best, they're the second best cap situation they've had in like how long, right? Like they actually have a route to cap space so they could actually go after a center in free agency with cap space. Like, when the hell was the last time they could even conceive of something like that? And then they have all their picks too. So it's like, they have all their first round picks. They have all the meaningful picks, at least.
The answer to your question is the disastrous summer of 2016, which we will not be repeating this summer.
Yeah.
So
but even that was like different, because you're just bringing all of those guys back. Right. You know what I mean?
Right. And it was cap spike time.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But this is the first time where you're like, all right, you can scan the league. You know, a need that you have. And you have a tool that should be or could produce, you know, produce one of these guys. So that is exciting. And yeah, I wouldn't be totally surprised if they went this route of, you know, signing a center and drafting a center, whether it be Sengun or Isaiah Jackson or JT Thor or whatever, or Kai Jones, if you see of him as like a five, he's almost a 4.5 or a whatever at this point, but just because of the defensive concerns with him. But yeah, but then it still leaves like the what are you doing in terms of the wing and trying to like add something to your perimeter defense that like desperately needs help, because the thought of like playing the Martin twins more for a variety of reasons, that ain't the solution. And maybe it's play Jalen McDaniels more, but that does some stuff to your team in terms of like playmaking and creation too. So there's some fixes on the roster, but probably not the ones you're actually like needing for like long-term, or at least like in terms of like even contention next season, that are really available to you. So you're probably gonna have to pull a lever with that, either with the draft or free agency or what have you.
All right, we'll go ahead and wrap here. I love Sengun's playmaking out of the pick and roll. I think despite not being a true lob threat, BG, I still like his fit perfectly fine within Charlotte's offense, especially if he does develop that shot. I think if he had more two-way impact right now, I think I'd be higher on this pick. I also think it's just because I'm locked into trying to figure something out with Rashawn Holmes and hoping that pans out and just go wing at 11. Yeah, that's kind of my thought process behind this. So it's a little bit biased in it. I feel like I'm not giving him a true shot here. So,
yeah. By the way, shout out to Ricky O'Donnell from SB Nation, who wrote a thing today about Team USA and their struggles. And he left a note on Twitter saying, hint, like Team USA, add LaMelo Ball and Rashawn Holmes to the roster. And my thought was, no, add that to the roster in Charlotte. Let's do that in Charlotte. Yeah, we can talk more about Holmes maybe. It'd be nice if there was a bigger gap between the draft and free agency, but I'm sure we'll have some time before the end of July to get to maybe a little more on Rashawn Holmes.
And Richie, maybe something we should get to before the draft gets here, like which we covered earlier, is very, very quickly, is we talked about it a little bit, but the possibility of Charlotte trading back into the first round. There's a number of teams. And I think then we could kind of tap into more of what we were getting to today, is like, all right, how do you address all these needs on the roster with the cap space and the draft? Well, if you had two first round draft picks later on, you could do some of that a little bit more strategically. So maybe something we can touch on next week.
Trade back to, I don't know if Sengun would be at 16, but trade back to 16 and 18 and get Sengun and Jaden Springer at those two picks. Then sign Rashawn Holmes. I think you and I talked about that with relation to OKC and Houston.
We did a little bit. I just think it might be good to maybe dive into that for like 25 minutes or
so next week. Yeah. And by the way, Richie, you tweeted this earlier on Twitter too, but shout out to Isaiah Miller, recent guest on BuzzBeat, who Richie and I had the pleasure of getting to sit down and talk with for a little while. He did work, in fact, as he said on that podcast, that he was going to work out with the Hornets. I believe Tuesday, the 13th of July, he worked out with Charlotte. So that was cool to see.
Yep. All right. For Spencer, for BG, I am Richie. We will see you guys next time. Have a good one.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.